Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
So it was about 10 years ago, I found out through my friend Jan Lewis, who loves the Lord, great sister in Christ, and a pro-life warrior herself, about this thing called Justice for All. When I first heard about it, I'm like, all right, so they do what on college campuses? Like, what do they put up at the time? And this has evolved a little. I hate to use that word, but I think it's effective. At the time, this display, it was a three-sided display. I think each side was about 40 feet long, about 18 feet tall, and smack dab in the middle of a college campus, okay? And on two sides of this thing, there were pictures of aborted babies from at the various stages of gestation, and then there were also some pictures of Holocaust victims and the whole Holocaust environment from World War II and other things. And so making that comparison of what's going on there in the Holocaust, which is now up to, well, approximately about 60 million unborn children here in the United States have been butchered. And then you're going to stand in front of that thing with a bunch of college campuses, college students who are largely liberal or think they know something. And like most people, regardless of age, their worldview is generally a mile wide and an inch deep. And then you got to be able to have a conversation with them that's productive and loving and kind and compassionate and patient. And there was no way I was going to be able to handle that. This was 2005. I'd only been an activist for about a year. So I went through the Justice for All training, which is really teaching you how to move from debate to dialogue. They take you through everything that a pro-choice person is going to throw at you. And instead of throwing bumper stickers at each other, which we typically do, no, you actually learn how to engage in a compassionate way with great information, great illustrations. And I didn't think I would be ready, but I spent 4 hours on the campus of North Carolina State. I spent 3.5 hours on the campus of University of North Carolina in front of massive pictures of aborted babies. And I had one incredible conversation after another. And thank God for the gospel, because I watched one young person after another, their view on abortion and their reasons for supporting it just would collapse. And then they're standing there trying to decide, what do I do next, when this thing that I thought I believed in, all of a sudden, this old dude has convinced me that maybe I'm in the wrong camp. And that's where you got to have a heart for people. But there was no way I would be ready to do it. I couldn't do what I do today if it weren't for the training I received from Justice for All. So I think either Jeremiah Johnson or John the Baptist walked into my studio. Steve Wagner's here. He's the executive director of Justice for All. And you're probably
big shoes to fill.
You're probably too young to know who Jeremiah Johnson are.
I may be too young.
Yeah. So Jeremiah Johnson was this great TV show. Jan, you might remember Jeremiah Johnson. This was a movie, and it was a guy. It was a wilderness dude. And so John the Baptist was a wilderness dude, right? And you kind of have a cool beard, mustache. You got the wilderness dude look. But you're a warrior, and I'm glad you're here. You just drove in from D.C.
I was just chopping wood yesterday.
Yeah,
so I feel, yeah.
So you fell right into that seat. So you just drove down here from Washington, D.C. What were you doing in our nation's capital?
Well, that's where I live now. I moved out here about a year ago, or earlier this year. So,
where'd you grow up?
California.
Holy moly!
And then moved to Kansas in 2009 to work for Justice for All, and then here I am in DC now.
Now, how did you get to the point where you wanted to really not only your life, but your wife and you guys? How many children do you have?
We have four.
So 4 children that you're going to make this investment in the pro-life cause. How did that happen?
Well, initially I committed to do 2 years, and that was 17 years ago.
Wow.
To me, I just wanted to do more to save unborn children than I was doing. I didn't feel like I was doing much at all. I was a school teacher, choral music teacher, and I had an opportunity to start following Scott Klusendorf around. He was doing speaking events. And I just found that I had some gifts that I could use in helping to train people. And so I just sort of followed that path.
And so before you kind of doubled down on it, what were you doing beforehand that you didn't think was much?
Well, I was having maybe a few conversations a year about abortion with people. just around my work or in my social situations at my church. And I felt like one thing that I could do is just start to give some training to people in my church. And that's how I started.
Yeah. And then once you found out that Scott Klusendorf is one of the greatest really pro-life speakers around and has been for years. And then, of course, Justice for All. And when you got involved with Justice for All, what was it about their approach that kind of drew you in?
Well, I like to say that I was working for Stand to Reason at the time for about 7 years. And one of my main speaking engagements that I did for Stand to Reason was training the volunteers for Justice for All events. And I like to say that going on my first few Justice for All outreaches really changed my life. It changed my apologetics because it forced me to use these arguments that I was teaching people to use. It forced me to actually use them in the real world and see how they worked.
And what was your experience?
Well, in many cases, surprising. They didn't work as well in some cases as I thought. It forced me to adjust some of my approaches. One of the main things it forced me to do was take seriously the person in front of me.
Yeah.
And it led me to start trying to find common ground with them. And that refining that approach actually led me to write a book in 2007. It was published in 2008 on finding common ground. It's called Common Ground Without Compromise.
Yeah, and I think the thing that surprised me, to kind of echo what you were saying, is I was really well trained. I was had been an activist for about a year. I've been a big mouth for all my life. So part of it fit like a glove. But I was surprised that even though I wouldn't say I was completely ready because, you know, we did the training, which it's not like it was 5 weeks, but I was fairly ready. But I tell you what, once I stepped on a college campus, I encountered a whole lot of young people that really weren't ready at all. So my fairly ready made me pretty dangerous with a bunch of people that weren't ready at all.
That's right. And that's what we've found is that with just a few hours with us, people can be ready at least to get on campus with us and listen into conversations. And then sometimes they even have their own conversations.
Now, in terms of finding common ground, that's the one thing that surprised me because back then, early in my activist days, I mean, anybody coming up that was pro-life, to me, that was just the enemy. I didn't have a gospel mindset. I wasn't thinking of this person as being kind of trapped by their sin or their ignorance. And so I kind of went into it with just a debate. This is going to be a debate, and one of us is going to win. Except that's why, you know, Justice for All says from debate to dialogue. And our heart being in the right place, we're going to talk to Steve Wagner about that. He's the executive director of Justice for All. When we come back and getting our heart in the right place, how do we view pro-choice people? And then how do we talk to them? How do we effectively dialogue with a person that actually thinks it's okay to kill babies in the womb in a way that would, well, make Jesus proud and might change their mind? This is Steve Noble with Steve Wagner. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. Call to Action Radio, one of the most important topics we can talk about outside the gospel, if not the most important outside the gospel, is the topic of life. Here we are in America. I was just in Washington, D.C. with my two younger kids, Caroline, who's 12, and Clay, who's 16. And I made sure, because they heard me talking about this before, I made sure we walked by the Vietnam War Memorial. If you've ever been by the Vietnam War Memorial, it contains the names of 58,000 soldiers killed in action during World War II. It's 465 feet long. If we were to make the same memorial, same basic dimensions, but did it to memorialize the 60 million children that we've butchered in this country since Roe versus Wade, guess how long it would be? So 58,465 feet long. If we do 60 million, how long would that monument be? Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. I'll give you the answer. 72 miles. 72 miles long. So then I grabbed my smartphone with my kids and I showed them a line going down I-85 or I-95 from Washington, D.C. south towards Raleigh, where I live. And I'm showing them, here's this whole line from where we're at right now by the Washington Monument. And here's 70 miles south. And that's the drive. And my son goes, and so every second of that drive, you would be looking at a monument that would have all these kids' names. Is that right? I said, yep. He goes, that's how long would it take to drive that far? And I said, well, if I obeyed the law, a little over an hour. And all you see is babies' names right along the highway for 70 miles. And that's why we have to talk about this. If we're not discussing it, I love you guys, but that's dereliction of duty as a follower of Jesus Christ. If we're not taking up the cause of the unborn, who definitely are the least of these. And that's why it's great to have Steve Wagner in the house today. Steve Wagner is the executive director of Justice for All, one of the greatest pro-life groups in the country, and great training, incredible training on how do you kind of move from dialogue to from debate to dialogue. And like next week, Thanksgiving. Could you imagine having a discussion of abortion over the turkey, the dressing, and the cranberry sauce? Well, there is a way to do that if God were to open that door, but most of us are not ready for those conversations, so we don't engage in those conversations. And then when we do get in them, we tend to get so emotional. We're so frustrated, most of us Christians who are pro-life, because you just can't believe the person on the other side of the conversations defending the murder of the unborn, yet there they are. And we're just not ready for the conversations, just like the gospel. So we avoid them. And Steve, that's really, is it? Would you say that's the center of Justice for All's mission, is training the rest of us how to have those conversations?
That's right. That's the very center. The conversation is our passion, but we want to train Christians to have those conversations.
And we were talking earlier before the break just about how you look at the person on the other side of the conversation. Whether if it's on a college campus, look, I've been with you guys, and Jan Lewis is here, and you've been all over the country with JFA, and you were just at where? Oklahoma State?
University of Oklahoma.
University of Oklahoma. So when you're in the conversation and you're talking to an 18 to 21-year-old and they're vehemently pro-choice, how should we think of them? As we enter the conversation, how should we get our minds and our heart in the right place?
Well, one of the things that I ask myself is, do I believe false things? And I believe that this person I'm talking to believes this something particular that's false, that unborn children are not children, they're not human beings, and we can kill them. And it's okay to kill them. It's really not significant at all. In fact, many of them believe it's not even significant enough to discuss. So we draw them into a conversation through one of our dialogue tools. I lost my train of thought.
Well, you know, when that happens and you draw them into a conversation, now that's the point of having a display on campus.
That's right. We draw them into a conversation. They aren't thinking about having a conversation at this point. Then when we get into the conversation with them, it becomes clear pretty quickly that they don't believe the unborn is a human being. They've dehumanized them.
Would you say that's the number one obstacle that you have to deal with in most of these conversations?
I think the first obstacle is that people think abortion is this debate that is full of activists that yell at each other, and we have a hill to climb to get them to think that the conversation could be more friendly early on. So when I come into that conversation, I come with an attitude that reflects on the fact that I think this person believes something that's false, but I also believe many things that are false. I just wish I knew what they were.
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't believe them. That puts me not toe-to-toe with that person. It puts me shoulder-to-shoulder with them so that we can look at this problem together and ask and see if we can make some progress toward the truth.
But you got to be ready, because there's all kinds of typical objections or defenses of the abortion decision that's out there.
That's right.
That most people that are pro-choice at this point, whether they're 18 or 48, those conversations tend to be the same basic nuts and bolts.
That's right. But here's the beautiful thing. Even if you know nothing, you could have a good conversation about abortion if you just know how to ask a few questions and listen to understand the person and then try to find common ground. That's like the sort of the beginning to a conversation. But many times, just asking people what they believe and what they meant by those beliefs and then why they believe those things helps them think it through. Sometimes they even change in the midst of just having to explain their beliefs.
Yeah. And just
you don't have to know anything to do that.
No. And what we don't do, there's a great book out there. Write this one down. It's called Questioning Evangelism. It's a great book. So that's how Jesus used questions to kind of be an evangelist. We don't, in these debates, we generally don't ask questions. We just all of our statements. They make all of their statements.
We take all the burden.
We get nowhere.
That's right. We take all the burden on ourselves. We make all sorts of claims, and then we have to defend them.
Right.
But if we ask them for why they think abortion should be legal, for example, and or even better, the first question should be, do you think it should be legal through all 9 months?
Right.
Almost nobody believes that. Most people will say, well, no, I would cut it off at 20 weeks or at viability or somewhere in the middle of pregnancy. And then I say, I agree with you. Abortion after that point should not be legal. I agree. And that brings more of a friendly tone to the conversation.
And now you're going to move. Now we're going to back it up 30 days. And then
we're going to
back it up another 30 days. But, go ahead.
But we're going to start by trying to find out why the person is against abortion at 35 weeks. Why are they against abortion then? Is it because the unborn's a human being?
Right. Because you're going to use the same logic as you move backwards in in the timeline. Well, in terms of the overall pro-life movement, how would you say that justice for all fits in? What's just, you know, if we're going to look at Nehemiah on the wall and everybody had their place on the wall, we have, you know, Jan Lewis, my friend, is in here, who, you know, is just diligent to be at abortion clinics every week. My other friend, Bishop Wooden, Patrick Wooden, they go to abortion clinics and their approach is different. They're down there yelling and give us your babies. We'll see, don't kill your babies. And if there's black men down there, the black men from Upper Rooms Church, they are confronting them directly. I mean, that's a whole different approach. And some people are just there to pray. Other people are there and yelling. And I'm not going to condemn any of that if it saves a baby. But where do you see Justice for All fitting in into the whole pro-life movement?
So one of the things our founder, David Lee, who you know, said, we all remember him saying many times, was it's as if people are going off the falls, like Niagara Falls, and there's all sorts of people that are falling over the edge of the falls, and some people are on the edge of the river right at that point trying to pull a few of them out. And that's a little bit like what's happening at the abortion clinic.
Yeah,
wow. We're way up the river. Our organization trying to help people not even get into the river and helping pull them out before it's an emergency, before there's really little hope that we'll be able to get many of them out. There is hope for some, and that's why those why Jan and others are out there at the clinic.
Well, especially on a college campus, you're going to be dealing with young men and women who are procreators. And they're going to create a situation that can lead to an abortion. If they start moving down the right road, they're going to have other conversations with other people. It really is the ripple effect. You want to get up to the top of the stream where you can infect everyone with the truth of God's word on the issue of life. This is Steve Noble with Steve Wagner of JFA. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. Quick reminder about our friends at MediShare. Since those of us that were not aborted, we're alive, and now we get an opportunity to take care of ourselves. MediShare, a great Christian organization, actually a not-for-profit, it's been around since 1993, pushing 300,000 Christians, coming up on that number nationwide. Six of them have the last name of Noble, and that would be my family. We've been with MediShare for 5 years now. So you have Christians all over the country sharing one another's major medical burdens. Financially, over $1 billion shared since 1993, takes you around Obamacare, allows you to save a whole lot of money, gives you control of your medical expenses and your medical costs. And imagine going into any doctor's office for any procedure, and you start talking about how much is this going to cost? Because I'm going to pay you today if it's just a normal thing. And they don't know what to do with you because they're so used to just sitting and putting it through the system. But you'll actually find out. I'll give you one example, then I'll be done. One example, when I had a kind of a major skin cancer that I had to remove, had removed from my right temple. I wrote them a check that day for $1,800. What they would have sent to Blue Cross Blue Shield in North Carolina was a bill for $8,000. So you go, how do you go from $8,000 to $1,800? Well, welcome to the healthcare system. So all of a sudden now you can start finding better deals. You're in charge of your money. And then when you have major medical expenses, that's where your MediShare family comes into play. And you have Christians around the country that will cover the tab for you. They've covered all of those expenses since 1993, over $1 billion. 855-BIBLE-11 is the phone number. Plus, you don't have to pay for things that you don't want to pay for, like the Hobby Lobby fought. So you don't have to pay for abortions, abortifacients, and Obamacare put all that stuff on the table. So give them a call. Find out for yourself. 855-BIBLE-11. Now available in Montana, 855-BIBLE-11. Talking to Steve Wagner today, the Executive Director of Justice for All. Just an incredible pro-life training that's available. They're going to be here in Raleigh, North Carolina, in the area where I'm at, in Apex, as a matter of fact. The Summit Church tomorrow evening. Jan, what time does that start? 5:45. So that's here in the Raleigh area in Apex. I've got the information for that on both my Facebook pages, on my personal page, and on the radio page. If you're with us on Facebook Live, you can see it there as well. Just go to facebook.com/C2A radio and you'll find the information right there. Tomorrow night, Saturday evening at the Summit Church in Apex at 5:45. Steve Wagner will be there and you'll learn to be able to move from debate to dialogue instead of throwing the positions at each other across the table. You can actually come alongside somebody next to them and have a conversation. So Steve, again, thanks for being here today. And I know you just drove down from DC and we'll get you out of here as soon as the time runs out, but What are some basics as we're going to move into a conversation with somebody that's pro-choice? What are some basics that we need to set up? And then we're going to go through, we'll just role play a little bit, some of the main objections that we'll get to the cause for life.
Well, so some of the things we'll talk about here are similar to the things we'll talk about at my session tomorrow night. I just want to mention that will be interactive. It will not just be a lecture. People will actually practice some of the tools that I'll be teaching. One of the basics, I would say, is asking questions with an open heart. And so every time I'm asking questions, I'm trying to do that in a way that seeks the good of the other person, not just seeking to change their mind, but seeking to partner with them and finding the truth together. So that's a hard skill for many Christians to learn. Many times we want to ask questions to refute the person. We want to ask questions to kind of work out our agenda of creating a convert.
Score some points, put some notches on the belt.
That's right.
You know, that was a good one. High five, bro. But that's not the gospel. That's not the point of the gospel. Right. You share the gospel, you share the bad news with people because they need to know it, and you love and care about them. And you love and care about the unborn children.
That's right. So one of the important questions I think that we can ask comes up when people bring up poverty, which is one of the most common reasons that people give for abortion. And
what kind of life is that to bring a child into the world when you know they're going to live in poverty? We have enough poverty problems as it is, and most of these unwanted pregnancies are in the inner city. So this is actually the right thing to do. It's actually a moral thing to do. To save that kid from a life of poverty.
It's compassionate.
Right.
And here's what most pro-life people will do. They will come back at the person immediately and say, well, we wouldn't kill a one-year-old for poverty. So how can that be a good justification for abortion?
Right.
Which is very out of the blue for most people. And we've decided that we want to get there. But how are we going to get there is the critical question. I'm going to start by finding common ground, and I'm going to agree with the person. I'm going to say, not agree with everything, right? I can't agree that that's a good reason to kill a human being,
right, of course.
But I'm going to agree with how difficult poverty is. And I wish that more pro-life people could just be more normal. Like when somebody,
I appreciate you saying that.
When somebody says that, here's a woman in poverty, like you just described, a normal person says, wow, that's really difficult.
It's horrible. Yeah.
That would be so hard. I can't even imagine how hard that is. Sitting in my seat today, and you're right. You're right that would be very difficult for those women.
Yeah.
That's a good start, because now the person that I'm talking to sees that I'm not just in this to win an argument. I actually care about these people.
And there's
hopefully,
also, of course,
you know,
the pro-choice charge that we only care about life up until the moment that they're born, and then we don't give a rip after that.
That's right, which isn't factually true. But if I start by just naming off the factual reasons, like pregnancy centers, we have thousands of pregnancy centers in the U.S. that are giving good, compassionate care to those women both before and after.
Yeah, some of them for
that's
up to
true.
2 years after the baby's born.
That's true. But if we just say that, people will miss the point that we actually actually see their point.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes we are so focused on the unborn child, we can't see the woman who's struggling with this pregnancy. And sometimes we're so focused on the unborn child that we can't see the person we're talking to. And we have to, in our view, we need to love all three of those groups of people. We got unborn children, the smallest humans on earth, and people don't have much compassion for them or empathy for them because they're, frankly, so small.
Yeah,
and
out of sight, out of mind.
And they don't look like us early on. But then we also need to love the person we're talking to. And while we're doing that, we need to love the person who's having this experience. So I'll sometimes just imagine that person's in the conversation, even if they're not.
Yeah.
And then how would I talk? How would I talk if a person who was experiencing unplanned pregnancy or who had been raped was in the conversation? I'd talk a lot differently than if I'm just doing an apologetics debate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'd be a lot more gentle and you'd be a lot more careful. And
right.
And when I talk to
And you might go slower.
People, right. You go slower. When I talk to lost people and when I'm on the air, that's a different gear for me. If I'm in a room and I know there's lost people, or if I'm just talking to a lost people one-on-one, I'm much more like this. And I'll slow down and I'll be much more gentle. I won't raise my voice.
That's right.
And that took me years to push that back, because before it was just debate. I'm going to win. I'm going to make some points. And so jab, counter jab, all that kind of stuff. Now it's like, okay, who did Jesus hammer? Only the religious big mouths of the day. Those are the only people he was brutal with. Everybody else, he was compassionate and patient. But going back to that poverty one, and then we'll move on to some other ones. But where do you kind of take him from there? You establish compassion. I agree. The poverty issue, this is a terrible thing in our country, around the world. Poverty and to have a child in poverty is horrible. I totally agree with you.
That's right. And I don't want to leave it there.
Right.
Because I have the unborn child in my field of vision, too.
Yeah, they're still in the conversation.
And if I leave it at common ground, then, and I never bring them in, then I haven't done any good for them. And I don't think I've done good for these other two people either, the person with experience and the person who I'm talking to.
So with the JFA training, where would you go next?
Yeah. So I'm going to say, well, I have a kind of an odd question that I'd like to ask you. It might seem off the topic, but I think it'll help our conversation. Is it okay if I ask another question?
Sure.
Person says, yeah, sure. I don't think I've ever gotten a different response. I'll say, imagine I have a 2-year-old here and his mother's very poor. Do you think she should be able to kill him? Now, I think I know what your answer is.
And I know it sounds like a crazy question.
Yeah.
But just go with me.
And they'll say, no, you can't kill the 2-year-old. And I'll say, now, this is going to sound a little bit odd, but just go with me here. Why don't we think, we agree, you can't kill the 2-year-old, but why do we believe that? Why shouldn't we be able to kill the 2-year-old? They're in a very difficult situation.
Yeah.
And the person might say it's illegal or something like that. But if we keep asking why, we're going to get down to the reason. They're human beings.
Right.
They're equal to us. And you can't kill our kind of being for reasons like poverty or they're going to have a hard life or whatever.
We can't kill each other.
That's right.
And we all agree with that.
We could at least start there, right? And so at that point, I'm going to just help the person to see where we're at in the conversation, and I'm gonna say, well, if the unborn is human like that two year old that I've just talked about, if the unborn is human like the 2-year-old, then we shouldn't kill the unborn either, right? And at that point, the person might say, well, sure, but it's the unborn's totally different. And I've succeeded at that point. I've succeeded in bringing the conversation more productively on the topic, what is the unborn?
Yeah.
That's where I want to be. But see, I might spend 10 minutes getting up to that point to find common ground with the person to understand what their concern is. So that's one example.
Yeah, when we come back, we'll deal with that. It's not really a life. It's not self-sustaining, can't feed itself, doesn't have any freedom. It's just a thing in the womb. We'll deal with that one, a couple other examples, and how to move forward. Again, a reminder, tomorrow night, Saturday night, here in the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area at Apex, the Summit Church in Apex, 545. Come out and hear Steve Wagner talking and get some training and get prepared to have productive conversations about life. We'll be right back. Listen, if you're doing anything, that's awesome. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. Another reminder real quick of one of our other great partners. This is Newer, and they're here in North Carolina. Well, most of you know about them, Oric Vacuum Cleaners. They've been around since 1963. It was kind of funny because when I went in there to learn about it, and we've had Oric's at the Noble House for a while, but they said, hey, there's one that's lighter than a gallon of milk. Now, I'm a talk radio guy, right? So I'd hardly believe anybody. Sure. So they bring this thing out to me, and I pick it up. And sure enough, it's lighter than a full gallon of milk, and I assume that's because it's empty and it doesn't actually work. Well, we have that at home, and it works exceptionally well. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense, but that's technology. That's awesome. So if you're listening on the Truth Radio Network here in North Carolina, oricarolinas.com, they've got some great specials just for Truth Radio listeners. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Truth Radio. You heard Steve Noble talking about it. Not just the products, but service, all kinds of other things there. But again, that's specific for Truth Radio listeners. They have locations around North Carolina. OricCarolinas.com is the website. OricCarolinas.com. We're talking to Steve Wagner. He's the executive director of Justice for All. And we were just talking about on the break, which was a break for you on radio, but on Facebook Live, we just kind of continue the conversation. But we've got people on Facebook Live right now. Some are prayer warriors and they pray and they prayer walk outside of clinics. Other people are disruptive. They're at clinics and they're holding up signs and they're yelling. And there's a lot of different places. This is like a big war campaign. And so you've got all these different parts and all these different players, and they're all valuable and they all serve a purpose. So let's make sure we don't shoot our own. Okay, that maybe that's not your speed to stand in front of an abortion clinic and yell at guys and gals trying to save babies. But I can tell you this, if you when your son or your daughter is locked in a house across the street and it looks like they're going to be killed, you're going to take some action, are you? Aren't you going to do that? You're going to get pretty radical in order to save that child's life. So think of it in those terms. And if that's not your cup of tea, that's fine. My challenge to you is you better have some cup of tea when it comes to the pro-life cause and for standing up for these babies. You better be doing something, not the least of which is prayer. It's the most powerful tool in our bag, the one that we use the least often. That's the one meeting at church every week nobody goes to. It's the prayer meeting. Mm-hmm. And so we've got this howitzer in our lives, and we don't use it. So at the very minimum, it's prayer. But then activism, supporting organizations like JFA. Or, by the way, one thing that Justice for All is doing is called Learn at Home. So I'm putting that link up on Facebook, facebook.com/C2A Radio. I put it up right for our friends on Facebook Live. So you can start doing that and learning these things at home. Tell us about that real quick. Steve Wagner's here. He's the executive director.
So, Steve, I totally agree that people need to get active. I think there is one point at which we need to draw a line, and that is we absolutely condemn any kind of abortion-related violence.
Absolutely.
So doing violence to stop abortion, we think that that's out. That's not the right thing to do. So the Learn at Home program is something that people can do. They can get active. We created that program for people who said, we can't come to a five-hour seminar, or we can't even come to your one-hour workshop tomorrow in Raleigh, or we can't come out to campus to do campus outreach with you. We don't have the time. And so we created a one-hour program. It's four 15-minute activities. You can do it on four nights over the course of a year. Can you give me 15 minutes, four nights over the course of a year? And we will prepare you to have your first conversation about abortion. It'll be a different kind of conversation, one that's marked by balancing or integrating love and truth.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the challenge. And Jesus was the perfect exhibitor of that. Tim Keller has said, and I quote this all the time now: if you're all truth and no grace, you're a bully. If you're all grace and no truth, you're a coward. Jesus, John chapter 1, verse 14, full of both grace and truth, not 70-30, not 40-60, but 100-100. Full of both. So that's one of the things I love about JFA, which taught me 10 years ago how to have a very difficult conversation in a very winsome, self-controlled, and loving and patient way, which has a great place on this wall.
And we see Jesus doing that over and over in his ministry. He finds a way to very skillfully love all of the human beings in the room. Some of those human beings need a rebuke, but he does it even in a way. Remember in John 8, Jesus, he's confronted by the Pharisees. He kneels down with the woman caught in adultery. Yeah. He kneels down. He writes in the sand. But why is he doing that? And he makes the Pharisees wonder what is going on here, which is they were the ones who were knowledgeable, and now they're trying to figure it out.
That's
and
right.
And they all leave, and the woman is sitting there, and Jesus says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." He transforms her life. He transforms the other lives in the room. That's what we're. He's a good model for us, the best, right?
Yeah, that's right.
We're trying to be like that.
Well, let's do another one. A lot of people say, well, you know, before a child is born, it's not really a life. Not self-sustaining, not breathing, not thinking, yada, yada, yada. Well, that's not really a life. Not until it's born. Because then they're going to be vehement to support. And that's why they won't kill a two-year-old that's living in impoverished conditions. But before that, it's not really a life. How do you handle that one?
Well, the most important question we can ask is, do you mean not biologically alive, or do you mean not alive in the sense of having equal rights and value like you and I? That's the most important question we can ask. Many times pro-life people assume that we're talking biology, but the person's actually in a totally different area of the conversation. They're talking about rights and value.
Yeah, because do you find it at all anymore that there's a lot of people out there when you're at a JFA exhibit, which, by the way, what do the exhibits look like these days? When you guys are on college campuses, what are you putting up?
So we have three different exhibits. One is the exhibit we built that you described earlier that was built in 2000. It's 18 feet tall in its tallest panel and then 40 feet wide. And we sometimes do reductions of that. So just two panels on a side would be 20 feet wide. That's one of our exhibits.
It's three-sided usually, right?
That's right. It's a triangle. For structural integrity. That exhibit focuses on what is the unborn and what is abortion, and then what should we do about it. We created two exhibits in 2016 to try some new things. One of them's an art exhibit called The Art of Life, and the tagline of that exhibit is, "The Art of Life is Better Than Abortion." Mm. And we actually put up classic works of art. We have a Van Gogh, we have a Mona Lisa, we have other works of art that would be very recognizable to students and any of your listeners. Yeah. And then we take a subject from the work of art, like suffering is one of our panels, suffering, better than abortion. And that really brings to the surface some of the main questions that people bring to the abortion debate. It's not obvious to people anymore that it's better to suffer than to be killed or to kill someone by abortion.
Right. That's powerful.
One of my favorite panels in that exhibit is Embracing Child and Career, Better Than Abortion. Mm. And we show it shows a woman holding her daughter. And it turns out the woman holding her daughter is the painter. So in that painting, Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun, the painter, was Marie Antoinette's chief portrait painter. She is actually living out embracing child and career in that painting. And we think that we can help women to aspire to something greater. They actually can do better than abortion. They deserve better than abortion.
Yeah. So there's the traditional one, which has the very difficult pictures,
images
on it.
Yeah.
There's the art one, and then there's a third one, right?
And that's called Stop and Think. And that exhibit was really meant to confuse people. It was built for the purpose of trying to draw people in by curiosity and want to know more. So we used the female symbol or the feminist symbol, some people would think of it as, and we combine that with messages that are aimed at a pro-life message or to humanize the unborn. And so we say, you know, is abortion important to feminism, or should feminists be pro-life? That's really one of the big messages of that exhibit.
Yeah. Should we be talking about abortion next Thursday over turkey and gravy?
So my suggestion on that is yes, but in a friendly way, like we've been talking about, and letting the conversation be filled with clarification questions. So the tough thing is if your goal at Thanksgiving is to change the mind of your aunt who you know disagrees with you and is really pro-choice, you're going to create this sort of awkward, combative environment that everybody's going to not want to have. And my suggestion is to go slower. Maybe use one of our dialogue tools that we have on one of our Twitter feeds is called 7 Conversations. And we've tried to build every post on that feed for pro-choice people with a pro-choice mindset. And you might use one. We actually have that painting I just described, the Louise Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun painting. You could share that painting, and you could say, "Look at this group. They're using this to talk about abortion. What do you think of their message? Is embracing your child and your career at the same time possible? And is it better than abortion?"
Yeah, and I think that's the whole point. You keep coming back to that. Is that to get into a conversation and stay in a conversation is a huge leap forward, because again,
that's
usually
right,
we're just throwing bumper stickers at each other if we even get that far.
Yeah, or the conversation's not happening at all. And that's our heart, is to try to make these conversations happen, not just in an activist environment on the college campus, which we care a lot about, but in everyday life.
Yeah, because it comes up, whether it's a political season. We've got an off-year election next year. We just came out of a general election.
That's right.
For president. It's going to come up. And like Thanksgiving, I wouldn't say, you know, I used
pull
to
out the Justice for All brochure,
right, and slap that down next to the gravy and say, "Okay, hey, the turkey's great this year, Mom. You did a good job, but I really want to talk about killing babies." I mean, I'm going to trust the Lord to open doors when it's appropriate, and that's where we have to be ready, because you can go in a certain direction, you can lean a conversation if you have the tools, if you have the training, like you can get at JFA, because you know where you're going. And you know you can handle it when you get there. And so you're more likely to show up. And that's really what we need to do.
So people praying for those opportunities would be the key, I think.
JFAweb.org is the website. JFAweb.org. This is the first time Steve Wagner has been on the show. It will not be the last. We'll make sure that we do this on a fairly regular basis. If you go to JFAweb.org, right to the homepage, you can go to the calendar where you can find the information for tomorrow night's meeting here in Apex, North Carolina, in the Raleigh-Durham area. other JFA events around the country. Also, under the Learn and Participate tab, Steve mentioned the Learn at Home. You can learn this. You can get these skills at home. So go to jfaweb.org. Steve Wagner, thanks for being here.
Hey, it's been great.
You're welcome. And friends, God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.